Bluntly shocked, I think, because I had no communications at all from the Chief Minister over the weekend to say anything was wrong. I had a WhatsApp telephone call shortly before 8 yesterday morning.
And that was it? That was the first you heard?
Yes. It turns out that I probably wasn't... I'm not the first person he spoke to. In fact, I think Mr Glover was informed about 7 or 8 minutes before I was told that I was going to be sacked. So there have obviously been some communications going on. I know the Chief Minister was speaking with certain members over the weekend, although not all of his ministers knew even. So, you know, it's, yeah, it was a bit of a out of the blue.
It must be quite disappointing to find out in that manner, particularly finding out that, that others potentially knew before you.
Disappointing is right. I think it's actually a testament to the Chief Minister's style of leadership that he wouldn't, you know, he didn't invite me into his office and speak to me face to face. It's literally a 2-minute WhatsApp phone call. And I think he was either in a hurry to get that. He hadn't. At the point he spoke to me, he hadn't actually spoken to Alex Allenson either. And he obviously had already briefed the media because that was on radio at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so I think he was trying to get through the phone calls before the news he'd already released. So he was anxious to do it, but you know, didn't even do us the courtesy of invite us into his office, explain why and look us in the whites of the eyes as he did it. It was just a quick, hurried phone call.
In terms of some of the policies that he's mentioned in terms of the decisions that he's taken, the 20 mile per hour, for example, the minimum wage as well, these aren't new policies. Are you quite surprised by the timing?
I think what you're seeing here is a Chief Minister now who is setting policy on the basis of social media, and wherever the loud voices come from is the direction that he heads in first. It's probably the opposite of what you do on a battlefield for triage. You know, you find the quiet people on the battlefield because they're the ones that generally need the help. But in this case, I think he's reacting to social media and to noise and going in those directions. He is fundamentally now undoing some of the Ireland plan. The minimum wage has been in the Ireland plan from the start. I don't know when he put that in there. Obviously, it was his Ireland plan and that was his covenant with the Manx people about what he was going to deliver during his tenure. Maybe he didn't understand when he put those words in there about aligning living wage and minimum wage. Maybe he didn't understand the repercussions, or maybe he just lacks the courage when it comes to it to take the final step to achieve that. So, you know, he's walking away now from things that Tim Ward have asked him to do and, you know, that he himself said he was going to do in his Ireland plan.
Particularly with the 20 mile per hour rollout, we know that Tim Cruckall has said that he's paused that. It did come from Tim Ward policy. It had approval in Tim Ward. The Chief Minister this morning talked about that you had gone beyond the remit of that 20 mile per hour policy. Do you accept that, or are you being made a scapegoat?
Definitely being made a scapegoat. You know, Tim Ward voted for it twice, and then I took back an implementation plan to Tim Ward last year. Now, admittedly, when you're in Council of Ministers, not all decisions are unanimous decisions. And I think Mr Thomas coined the phrase about the Chief Minister being a hostage in his own Council of Ministers. But to be fair, if the Chief Minister lacks the intellectual dexterity and political nous to be able to persuade the ministers that his direction of travel is the right direction of travel and to take them along with him, he's probably in the wrong job. We went through the implementation plan in Council of Ministers. I took that forward to Tim Ward. That got approved by Tim Ward. So that direction of travel has been well set. That consultation has been an extended consultation. There have been hundreds of responses to it. All of the stuff is open and published on the 20 mile an hour website. And I think this is just Mr Cannon reacting to the wind blowing in a different direction.
Were these concerns raised when it was discussed in Council of Ministers?
Yes, Mr Cannon obviously had concerns. He does listen to that kind of the noise and the voices. However, what he's not listening to is the people who are on the other side of the argument saying, yes, please, yes, I want this on my road. And I don't think he's looked at any, he's not a details focused man. So I don't think he's looked at the details of what's proposed where to actually understand that. And across the weekend, you get the likes of Mr Collister saying, well, this is outrageous because Tim Ward didn't approve this. Tim Ward absolutely did. Tim Ward approved the implementation plan. Mr. Collis was probably still smarting because his amendment was batted out, but Mrs. Corlett amended it to strengthen the motion of what was going to be delivered. So that's been in play for months now. It doesn't need to be a Monday morning hurried 2-minute WhatsApp phone call to end this.
When it came to the criticism, Dr. Hayward, of the 20-mile-an-hour rollout, you certainly weren't backing down. You were obviously very, very keen to push this through. Do you regret that approach now?
No, I still think it was the right thing to do. I still think, I know from having spoken to people across the island, every local authority that we've been to not only has said, yes, we want this. Very often they've said, but we'd like more speed restrictions here. We'd like extended, we'd like buffer zones. There have been a few bits where some local authorities like Kurt Michael have said, no, we don't want it in the main road. And that's taken into account in the consideration, in the consultation responses that we were looking at. So actually, everywhere I've gone, where I've actually sat down and had quiet, calm conversations with representatives of every community, it has been something that they want for their communities.
Let's just look at your relationship with local authorities, because we heard from the chair of Castletown Commissioners before 8 o'clock saying that relationships with yourself may be not the best they could be. Your response to that, do you feel you had a good relationship with local authorities?
The Department of Infrastructure has a relationship with local authorities across a number of spheres of activity. So particularly in housing, we had an excellent housing conference this year, which was something that between myself and Mr. Hooper was revived. It had fallen off the radar because previous ministers hadn't bothered doing that. We've built really good working relationships with them over that. Government is supporting keeping things like the Northern Civic Amenity site open because the Northern parishes couldn't manage to sort themselves out. I think there are a number of local authorities that are in trouble because they don't have their clerks in their substantive posts. And so there are issues with the local authorities. And unless you understand that context around it, some of the noise that's been created about local authorities has been wound up by the clerks themselves, who are threatened by the changes that were in the Local Government Amendments Act because it will curtail their power a little, and rightfully so, it should. And so I think you have to sometimes ask, what are the motivations for why people are pushing back on this? I understand that local authorities feel that the Clause 5 that was introduced is something that is going to allow us to transfer services across to them, and that's just not the case. And there's been so much misinformation, and I'm deeply sorry that I haven't managed to explain more clearly to local authority representatives exactly what that does, and I haven't managed to help them understand the legislative process and where that's up to.
What was your relationship like with your senior officers in the department?
The department is it's a broad department. It's a difficult department to get hold of because of the sheer range of activities that it undertakes. However, I'd started on a programme that had been started by Mr. Crookle and the Chief Minister, and then Mr. Crookle had been back in again and about DOI reform. And some of that meant moving services across to other departments. But actually, in the last year, we've taken fundamental steps. And so you've seen the setting up of the housing agency. And it's about taking those decisions in the right areas at the right levels and empowering officers to be able to deliver within an agreed framework the services within their particular area.
But did you have a good relationship with your senior officers?
Absolutely. I had a very good relationship with the senior officers. You know, I've kind of worked through with them about what does change look like and how do you take the department into a place where the structure is better, the governance is clearer, the political accountability is there. And they have embraced that process and been working on it with me. So, you know, they've all done a sterling job. I'm really impressed. They were a great bunch of people to work with.
Ultimately, it's the ministers that carry the can, but senior officers, for example, the Liverpool Ferry Terminal has been a long-running saga that started years before you joined the department. But it kind of rumbles on, that whole issue last year with Manxman not being able to dock there at certain tide times and certain levels of tide. You know, that is something that I think in the public eye has really, really rumbled on. The time it's took, the cost. Is there any accountability when it comes to the senior officers in the DOI, or do they consistently get away scot-free with these long-running issues? Is there any accountability at all?
I think the factors you've mentioned are, you know, they're quite difficult, and there are multifactorial considerations that need to be in there. So if we take, just for example, the mooring over at Liverpool, When I came in as minister last year, I was aware there were problems across the winter, that we knew Manxman's ropes were snagging. Now, that comes down to the design of where those bollards were going to be. So that comes back to the design company. And the department, very sensibly, didn't design those things itself. It went out for an expert company in the field in order to design those. So you start getting into this whole, where did it go wrong in the steps? And it's not necessarily department officers, because let's face it, they recognise that that wasn't their skill set and they contracted in a specialist to do it.
But the specialist really didn't do a good job if Manxman couldn't dock there for half of the time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the point now where what I've authorised is the department has taken the steps now. We're working through all of those problems and the contracts that we had with the different companies that were involved, in order to work out where the liability lies and things. I was preparing in the next few weeks to come back and just brief Comin and ask for permission to go back into Tynwald with what would be the largest figure, you know, that we would be expecting to pay over the Liverpool Sea Terminal, knowing that we were in negotiations and we're in mediation in order to try and reduce that figure. So I was absolutely quite willing to go public with what the quantum was going to be. Everyone keeps accusing us of trying to hide it. We're not going to try and hide it. I know what the maximum might be. It was down to negotiations to see how much we could knock off that bill because of failures by the other companies that were involved.
And just briefly, we must touch on the airport, because that again has been a long-running saga for several years now with all sorts of different issues. How much do you think the airport has played a part in your downfall as minister?
The airport is a challenging environment. It's highly regulated. It operates, you know, on kind of like a promontory into the Irish Sea that's exposed to weather. So there will always be a number of challenges there. I actually think the airport has been slightly knocked off kilter by this whole idea that we were going to commercialise the airport. And actually, when you start looking at the evidence for that, that was never going to be a possibility. The airport is always going to require a subvention to keep working. And once you've got to that point, the government is always going to be paying towards it and therefore has a greater stake in what's going on. Actually, what you have to do is you have to set up sensible governance around that. And that was what was in the process of being.
Another couple from me. Let's talk about your, predecessor and now successor, Tim Crookall, coming back into the Department of Infrastructure for a third time as Minister of DOI in this administration. Your thoughts regarding that appointment?
I'd hope it was her third time lucky, but we know that Mr. Crookall resigned from Comin the last time he resigned because he didn't like the transport strategy that the department was bringing through, even though that was a document that when he was minister in June 24, he'd actually signed off on. And there have been no fundamental changes to that document between where he signed it and where I brought it forward to Tynwald. So I'm not sure that he's always a details man. I'm not sure that he reads the papers that he's given enough to make sensible comment or to guide it. And I expect that what he will do is sit there now and just bide out the time to the election and not achieve anything, which is a real shame because there were so many work streams ongoing in the department that were going to deliver so much.
When you picked up from Mr. Crookall as DOI Minister in November 2024, what state was the portfolio in at that point when you took on the DOI Minister role?
I describe it as having the longest to-do list that anyone's ever seen, because there were a number of Tynwald commitments and a number of Island Plan commitments that just weren't being delivered on. I have, during my tenure, tried to move all of those forward, supporting the officers in different areas to deliver. And actually, there are a number of things that have moved on substantively during my time there.
In the last 6 years, the list of DOI ministers is long. Ray Harmer, Tim Baker, Tim Crookall, Chris Thomas, Tim Crookall, yourself, and now Tim Crookall again. I think we've covered all of them there. What is it about the department that seems to go through ministers at an absolute rate of knots? I don't think anybody on that list really did more than a year as DOI minister.
I got just over the year.
Just over, yeah.
I know. I describe the department as unfinished business. I've been looking forward to, so we get to September and election. And I think I'd been asked on Andy Winch's show about whether I would come back to DOI. And I most certainly would have done. I think it takes a little bit of time to understand the complexity and the breadth of the department. But it also takes a clear vision for leadership and governance and structure in order to manage that workload. It's a horrendous workload, don't get me wrong. I think I mostly do 80-hour weeks and I won't have that anymore. But actually it's a department that is manageable. It's a department, though, that you need to take your time with and understand that you have engineers and experts in every region that you're dealing with who all have slightly different perspectives on how they're going to achieve their goals.
No doubt about it. You worked very hard in your time as minister. Yourself and Alex Allenson, interestingly, from our point of view, we found you certainly some of the most communicative ministers. Some within Comin during this administration haven't spoken to us very much. They've sort of ignored interview requests, but you were sort of always here when we asked. Yourself and the Treasury Minister, you always accepted invites to come on to Man in Line. You engaged with the electorate on social media. Do you think the fact that you have been so talkative and communicative has played a part in your downfall? Do you think the Chief Minister didn't like that?
I'm not sure if I know what the Chief Minister does or doesn't like, to be fair. I think in the year that I was in my post, the actual one-to-one conversations I had with the Chief Minister probably were, I can count them on one hand. I don't think I've ever been part of a team where there was less team spirit and less support and leadership from the person who was in charge of the team.
So Comin, not a good place to be, you're saying?
No, I think there are probably quite a few ministers who say they love the job of being the minister for their department and they love delivering on what the departments are trying to achieve. But actually, Comin, not a happy place.
You were talking a moment ago about the to-do list within the department. Given that we have seen so much chopping and changing with the ministers, not just in DOI, but in other departments as well, how much of an impact do you think that has on getting through that to-do list?
Absolutely massive. I think there are a number of things that have sat around waiting for decisions. And I certainly, when I went in the department yesterday to say goodbye and to thank officers, you know, they described it as a snow day because everyone said, well, we're just sat there waiting now. We don't know what direction we're going to go. We don't know what we're going to be asked to do. So we can't do anything at the moment. And that inertia will follow through for the next 2 or 3 weeks. There were a number of things that the department was working on. We were looking at the reinstatement of the horse trams. As I said, we were going to talk about the costs for Liverpool. We've got things like the lease for the steam packet going into the Liverpool terminal. We've got the sea services agreement coming forward. You know, there are significant, serious and impactful pieces of work being done within the department. And all of that will just grind to a halt. And I'm concerned now that the progress that's absolutely needed just won't happen.
There are now around 7 months until the House of Keys is dissolved before the election in September. For you, what are the priorities now? I can't imagine you're going to sit quietly on the back benches. I imagine you're going to have targets in mind. What are your focuses?
I've already declined any offer to go back in to support any government departments. I think at the moment, I don't think that Alf Cannon's tenure as Chief Minister is going to be remembered for strong and courageous and stable leadership, because I don't think we've had that. I think we have a government that is weak and is unstable. You've commented on the number of ministerial changes today. I was trying to work out the number of U-turns that have been forced, but actually they happen so often I'm not even sure that they're U-turns anymore. We're just heading in whichever direction the social media wind blows. So I will not be going in and supporting the work of government departments. My diary has suddenly become very clear and I have an awful lot of time. I have more things that I wish to do in the constituency, so I will be out and about in the constituency, and I've recently had some personal and family challenges as well, so it gives me a little bit more time to spend time with family at the time where they need support. So I'll be doing that, and then obviously stepping back into my role now of asking questions and challenging government and ministers.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.